Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to PrettyLitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Run As Well podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
This week, we're speaking with marathon runner Charlotte Purdue about her fantastic performance at the London Marathon.
Third fastest British woman of all time over the marathon distance. No biggie. I actually went and saw Charlotte in real life and had a sit down and chat with her. But before we get into that, and because within the context of the conversation with Charlotte, we touch upon the post-marathon blues, you know, how even the elites have to come down from the heady heights of competition. We had a message on Instagram from Joe, and she has said she completed the marathon on Sunday. Congratulations, Joe. It was the day I dreamt about since I was a teenager, and it didn't disappoint, up there with one of the best days of my life. So there you go, everyone. That's the power of the marathon. However, I'm now suffering with severe post-marathon blues. I'd really appreciate any advice you have on this. So Rick, post-race blues.
Yeah, I think, as you say, very, very common for people to get it because you've been focusing on this one thing for, you know, in the case of the recent London Marathon, maybe 2 years. So, and you do it and it's great. And then, of course, there's that come down. It's a similar sort of thing to, I guess, famous musicians might have after they come off stage and nothing's going to compares to that moment in the sun. I would say, number one, don't sign up for another marathon immediately. You might want to do that down the line, but I think that changing your focus is a really good thing. So a bit of downtime, and then think about, I mean, running so broad, it's not just about marathons, is it? That you've got could you go and get a really good 5k time that you could practice, you know, every park run on Saturday? Could you get a good 10k time? Could you go and do something like a trail run or a fell run, something that's really outside your comfort zone? Even maybe going into triathlons, or if you're feeling trendy, the swim run.
Oh,
which you can do with a friend, actually. So that, okay. I think those sort of looking a little bit more broadly, not just thinking about the marathon, can give you a different focus. Because I think if you jump back onto the marathon treadmill, it's a recipe for burning out a bit. So that would be my advice.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that you've got to sort of wallow in your achievement a bit. You've just got to wallow in it. You've just got to recognize the achievement that you got there. And I know that like that's hard to sort of like do. You want the sort of the next thing, or you maybe want that, you want to repeat that high of the day. But that will come, I think, with everything if you sort of just reflect on what it was that you achieved, how long it took to get there. And then, as you say, like maybe think outside the box a little bit and just sort of go with an idea or a different strand of running. That might be the best way to do it. But most importantly, Joe, an absolutely normal reaction. And congratulations again.
I've been running as well, Ben, but with a buggy. I've become one of those buggy runners.
They're very good.
Well, yeah, because I was a little bit like, the promise of the running buggy is better than the reality. Because I was like, actually, when I go running, I kind of, if it's practical, I'd like to not be kind of a parent while I run. I'd like to just be doing my own thing. But actually, park run on Saturday morning, obviously it's a great sort of family time. Lucky enough to have a running buggy. So I've been heading down to the local one. Start pretty close to the back, because I think that's probably buggy running etiquette.
Polite, yeah.
It's been really good.
Depends how fast you're going. Depends how fast you're going to go,
Rick. It's been really good, actually. I've really enjoyed it. And I think that my son likes it. Well, he's not hating it anyway.
Know if he hates it.
Yeah, anyway. It's been good. And I mean, actually, it's been good to get back and do parkrun regularly as well, because I was probably a bit of an infrequent parkrunner just because I was tending to go for slightly longer runs on Saturday morning. But in my current state, it's sort of perfect. So
So yeah. I'm going to ask, on a technical running nuanced biomechanical question.
Yeah.
How have you found running buggy has impeded or improved your sense of economy when you run?
I think it's surprisingly easy once you get going in a running buggy. It's definitely a one-handed job. I think you need one arm going, doing the full arm motion. And I try and swap it around a little bit so I'm getting some sort of symmetrical thing going on.
Yeah, you don't want to over... I feel like you could sort of give yourself some sort of... over years of one-handed, yeah. Just one-handed, you'd twist or something. Your obliques would do something strange.
I guess you can use it to your advantage. I think most people probably have a lazy arm when they run. So yes. I do. So my left arm, it doesn't want to move naturally as much as my right. So I try and actually hold on to the buggy of the right and get the left one moving a bit.
Nice.
So that actually works out okay. And it's just a very efficient use of time, part one, is it? Because you can get out, everyone can do it, and then obviously you can go and have a coffee or whatever at the end. I've been loving it. So yeah, I've become a bit of a running buggy convert because I was slightly against it before. Not against
the buggy
it,
boys.
Just, yeah, the buggy yeah. boys, yeah.
Well, I haven't got one, so shout out anyone who wants to send me a running buggy, please do. Right, should we speak to our incredibly fast guest?
Let's do it. Yeah, let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete.
Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown. Charlotte, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thanks.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Still a bit tired from the race, but it's been like a whirlwind few days. Really exciting as well.
Most people after the marathon, any marathon, the cool down, the sort of like the stairs of the issue, you know, the getting around the house, that sort of stuff. How has it been for you?
Yeah, it's not been too bad. I mean, it's been my seventh marathon and each one I've got better. I also think like the technology in the shoes as well massively helps recovery. So if I compare it back to my first marathon when there was no carbon shoes, I was battered. But I feel actually my legs don't feel too bad today.
Have you been running yet?
Yeah, I ran yesterday, so I took one day off.
Oh, just the one.
I couldn't stay away. I actually find running really easy and really slow helps recovery. So I did 20 minutes yesterday and just 25 minutes today, and I'll just gradually increase, but no proper training for at least 2 weeks.
Oh, that's good.
Probably a bit longer, actually.
Yeah, it takes some time off, all right.
Yeah.
Have you had a chance to process? Well, I mean, we're talking on Wednesday, the race is 4 days ago. Have you had a chance to really think about London Marathon, the race itself, soaking it all in? Or was it, you know, how when you look back on it now, how are you reflecting on it?
Yeah, I haven't had a chance, honestly. Like, I haven't even been home since the race. It's just been absolutely crazy in a good way. But yeah, it feels a bit surreal because I was thinking about the London Marathon for like 8 weeks every day and now it's over. So I'm a bit kind of like, what's going on? Like, I don't have training tomorrow. It's so weird. Just like not waking up and thinking like, oh, what's on my schedule today? It's just, it's strange, but yeah, it's a good strange.
I think lots of runners have that though, don't they? Because the build up to any race is the kind of the journey. That's the big journey part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
The race itself is kind of the event at the end, but the build up and the progress that you make and you see and you feel, that's the kind of the bit that you take away, really. The race day tends to be sort of a weird blur of like, this is happening now, oh good, right, okay.
Yeah, I think as well with the marathon, you can't race all the time, so you do like one big race, and it's not like for a track runner you can go every weekend. Even if they have like the Olympic final, they could do like Diamond League a week after, whereas for the marathon obviously you got like one race, and then pretty much like you might have another marathon in the year, but not really. So it's one race, one day. So it's all in for that one day.
Did you feel a vast amount of pressure?
I'd say yeah, but more myself, because I hadn't run a marathon since 2019. So I just wanted to go out there and have a good one and prove that I was still a good marathon runner.
Right, yeah, right.
Because like I said before, you only get so many chances, and before I'd got injured or yeah, like things hadn't gone my way, but 2019 was my last good marathon in London.
Yeah.
So it was good to come back to London and do another good one.
PB it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, the last two marathons I've run, I've got big PBs.
That's great.
Yeah.
I think everyone's talked about selection and then the Olympics and all that sort of stuff. And to sort of skirt that, you sort of referencing how this was probably a sort of like proving a point to certain people, but more importantly to yourself.
Yeah.
Is that kind of how the race
in your head? Did you have to switch it off from almost being like, I'm going to show those guys, to this is just for me?
Yeah, 100%. Even in the training, it was all just for me, really. And like I said, to prove that I could still do a good race. I kind of, after the Olympic selection, I just kind of had to move on.
Yeah.
So I like drew a line under it and I was like, right, my next target's London Marathon. That's what I'm aiming for. Even when the Olympics was on, I was just like not watching it, just kind of staying away from social media. And yeah, I wasn't really focused on it. So I guess on the day, yeah, I wasn't thinking about them. I was just thinking about, right, this is what I got to do. It's going to be my day today and I'm going to execute a good race. So yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah, it did.
It did. Did you have a chance to sort of, I mean, was that your first... You did a big half?
Yeah.
So in terms of like mass participation races with crowds?
Yeah.
How was that? Like, did London, was it up there with your previous, like, you know, running it previously? Was it nice to be back in that environment?
Yeah, the big half was my first race of the year. And yeah, I actually didn't get to do any of the like COVID races because I was injured, and then I just chose not to race. So yeah, I missed all the like elite only COVID races. So my last race in 2020 was a mass participation race, and then yeah, the big half was my first one back. So I didn't get to experience
I'm
glad about.
Yeah, right.
But I did see on the TV like what it was like, and it didn't look enjoyable, so I was glad to have the crowd on Sunday.
You posted on Instagram that adversity is only the beginning. Now that obviously in direct reference to sort of like setbacks that you've had, the Olympics, injury and all those sorts of things. How's your running now? Like, obviously you're off the back of a PB. Are you in a place now where you feel you have recaptured a passion for it and like an enjoyment with it?
Yeah, and I think as well, because I didn't race in so long, and like I said before, I did a good race in 2019, then there was like a massive gap, really. I think it just proves that, you know, I'm still like in the game, and if I take time off, it doesn't mean that I'm out of the game, because I think a lot of people think if you don't race all the time or you don't do a good performance every weekend, it means you're like not relevant anymore. But I think you can take time away to reflect, even if you're injured, to like rebuild, and you can still be back in the game and be better. So I think that was a good thing for me, really, because I took so much time away from racing. Yeah. It didn't really do me any harm at all.
I think there's a lot of pressure as well to be seen to be doing something all the time, right?
Yeah, there's like so much pressure.
Social media and...
Yeah, and people are like, when are you going to race again? And stuff like that. And I was just taking my own time and kind of like not telling anyone when I was going to race, because I needed to wait till I was ready. And I didn't want to do a race just for the sake of racing. I wanted to race when I felt like I would do a good race. So the big half was my first race in 18 months. So it was a bit weird being out for that long, but I did feel like, yeah, I was ready to race when it came down to it.
And it was your first race in with a new sponsor?
Yeah, that was cool. I wanted to get one done for Adidas, because I didn't feel like a proper Adidas athlete till I'd raced in the kit.
And like showing yourself out there. Yeah, sure, like I get that.
I wanted to race in the kit so I could be like, yeah, I'm an Adidas athlete now, even though obviously I feel part of the team, but it was good to actually do a race.
Just a sort of bit of insight, changing sponsors is a significant deal for like, it disrupts everything for an athlete, right? If you just like as an idea of like, it changes your, does it shift your coaching? Did it change your strategy or your week to day-to-day life, everything?
Yeah, no, it didn't change my coaching, luckily. But I was obviously with Nike for 12 years. So it was a big change, more just for the footwear, for example. Not because there's any difference in the shoes. Like, the shoes are great. I love the shoes. But it was just my feet getting used to a different pair of shoes. But yeah, the transition was actually really good. I mean, yeah, I love the shoes. And
again, it seems to be working.
Yeah, I actually posted on Instagram as well, like, that I was faster in the three stripes because, I'm obviously 2 minutes faster than I was in 2019, so.
Oh, well, that'll teach them. Because this was such a long training block.
Yeah.
How much of that was based around sort of getting over the injury and then rebuilding up to this race? How did it sort of like progress for you?
Yeah, so I was injured in January, and I was back running at the time of the Olympic trials, but the medical team told me to miss the trials to focus on getting ready for the Olympics, because obviously rushing a marathon build up and then going into a trial race and then doing another marathon at the Olympics wouldn't have been ideal. So they told me to miss the trials, get ready for the Olympics. But then obviously after I wasn't selected, there was a lot of drama. I took a bit of time off, not off running. I was running every day, but I wasn't doing like training. I was just doing easy runs for probably about 3 or 4 weeks, and a lot of cross training just to get my head like back in and just to relax a bit, because I knew I wasn't going to race for a while if I wasn't going to the Olympics. So yeah, I started training for the marathon probably about June, July time. And then, yeah, we started getting ready for London. But I actually found, because I'd taken such a long time off from marathon training, it clicks back into place really quickly. I was quite worried. I thought, because I had taken so much time off doing marathon stuff, that I needed to start from scratch almost. My coach was like, no, you don't need to start. I actually only did 3 long runs over 2 hours, which isn't that many. And I was worried that wouldn't be enough, but obviously it was fine. And yeah, like I said, everything clicked back into place, and I think your body doesn't forget what you've done before.
Have you always been like a runner who cross trains and not particularly high mileage, or in terms of like comparative to, you know, people who rack up hundreds of miles per week and all that sort of stuff?
No, I've been like the high mileage person before. But yeah, this time my coach really didn't want me to get injured, because obviously having the injury before missing the Olympics, it would have been like a disaster if I couldn't make London. So his approach this time was so much different. Before, we'd done like 120 miles per week for about 8 weeks almost, up and down. But this time probably averaged only about maybe 90. So a lot less, because he just didn't want me to get injured. But obviously, like I said, it didn't seem to do any harm.
Yeah, right.
Which is surprising even to myself, because I was a bit worried.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. We've spoken to like middle, on this podcast, we've spoken to like middle distance runners, and we've spoken to like marathon runners and ultra runners. And it's so interesting how like comparative to sort of perhaps slightly more old school approach of just being like full all mileage the whole time, to like the ultra runners who are doing 40 miles a week, but they're just cross training just so hard that it's that sort of endurance absolute level. Do you find that you now, do you think you've this will sort of change your approach? Do you think you found a better solution for yourself?
Yeah, I think I just got to not get injured really, because that really disrupts like the whole thing, because you have to start from scratch again. And yeah, having the time off for injury is just so annoying.
Yeah, right.
Because even like after the injury, you have to build up slowly, and I hate that part. So I think, yeah, basically, if I can stay injury free, that's the key. And I don't know if doing the high mileage was getting me injured before, or it was a combination of factors like the pandemic, I think, because I didn't have any races, I was just training hard and not having rest, like rest weeks or recovery weeks. So I was just like training every week the same. I think that didn't help either, because I needed like, yeah, to have a race so that I could take time off after and then rebuild, but there was nothing.
Is it, I mean, in terms of how you got into running, I mean, what was the starting point for you? Just for, you know, if you were going to encourage people to get into running, how did you start that process?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, I started at school. So my friends like signed me up for a cross country race at school, and I just found that I enjoyed it. And then, yeah, I wasn't very good. I was like, I think 6th in my school or something. So just out of the year group, I was the 6th best. So that's not even like, And then, yeah, I just went to a club and then did races. And even at the races, I wasn't coming first straight away. It took me probably about 3 years to even win a race. But I just enjoyed it. And then once I trained harder, I found that I was getting better. So then I just trained harder and then it got better. And then it was like, yeah, and then I was addicted to running.
Yeah,
so
that's it.
I think that was it really. Yeah.
I love it. It's quite a simple method. Just get, just train really, really hard and get better.
Yeah, literally that is what I did.
That's good. How would you sort of encourage others to start running?
Yeah, I'd say like groups are really good, like the Adidas Runners groups, the community groups, like going along to sessions like that where it's fun. And you're not running by yourself and someone's setting your training for you as well. That's really good because it takes, you don't have to think about it then, and it's enjoyable. It's social as well. I think that's a great way to start running. And then, yeah, obviously after that, if you enter a race, then it's more motivation to train because you want to do good at the race.
Train harder, get better.
Yeah, so train harder, get better, yeah. Pretty much.
Do you remember your first race, that cross country race?
Yeah, I remember it well. I came like, so the school, the top six in the year group went to the district schools. It was cross country. And yeah, my first coach was there and I came 16th out of the district. So not even that many schools. And yeah, my first coach came over to me and he just said he saw that I started at the back and I worked my way through to 16th. And he was like, I think you've got a good running style. You should come down to my club. And that was it.
That was it. Yeah. That was good. Because I mean, I guess at that point, most people would have just gone, oh, well.
Yeah. And also like credit to him as well. I was 16th. Like I wasn't winning. I didn't win the race. And he came over to me and said that I had a good running style. And I don't think I had a good running style, but he just said he saw how I started at the back and worked my way through and he thought I'd be good. So yeah, he did good.
Hey, fair play to him. He's done well.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Your PB at the weekend has now put you as the third fastest British woman. That's some achievement. I mean, the two ahead of you are no slouches. So, how, you know, and certainly Mara, who's in second.
Yeah.
14 seconds.
I know.
Now, can you find 14 seconds if you look back?
Yeah, I honestly think like, so the second half of the race, the pacemaker dropped out at 30K.
Yeah.
So I had 12K completely alone, like no race. There was no people in front of me because they were like a K up the road.
Right.
And then there was the people behind me were like a K behind. So I literally ran alone for 12K. And I think like if I had a race or a pacer, then I like to think I could find those 12 seconds because it was hard to, just run by myself. I had no idea what pace I was on. I didn't look at my watch. I was just running. And then when I turned the corner and heard on the tannoy that I just missed the time, I was like, oh no, because I literally had no idea, what time I was on. I could have been running 2:22. I could have been running 2:24. I had no idea. So I think, if I had a race the second half or a pacer or something, then could maybe find those seconds.
Yeah, right. When you're doing races, you know, you say you don't look at your watch. Do you run a lot on feel? Is that kind of like your instinct is when it comes to race day? You'll train with technology or whatever it is, but on the day?
Yeah, I think a bit of both, really. I do like to start off looking at the watch or have a pacer because obviously the marathon's such a long way, you got to get it right. But then the second half, I think there's not really much you can do except run really fast, as hard as you can. Because by that point, like, even if the pace had said I was 12 seconds down, I don't know if I could have done anything about it.
Yeah, right.
Or, yeah, I was just running as hard as I could for that last 12K. So I was probably running a lot by feel. Yeah, I don't think I would have looked at my watch.
Yeah, I think hearing it probably wouldn't make, because it even might have been a bit of a setback if you hear that out loud.
Yeah, exactly. And then you try and push harder and then you get more fatigued and don't, and then slow down at the end because 12K is still quite a long way. So I think, I don't know if it would have helped or not really.
How did you get into the sort of, obviously training physically, you've got over an injury and you've built up the mileage and you've cross-trained and all that sort of stuff. How do you mentally prepare? What's your process with that? Are you a sort of visualization person? Do you like really like focus on like that end finish line and like picture yourself crossing in a certain time, or are you just sort of more sort of like casual about it?
Yeah, I'd say more casual about it. I think the training gets me ready for it. If I've done the training, then I can relax, because I think once I got to the week of the race, I was way more relaxed because I wasn't injured or ill. And I was so worried about those two things. One, like getting injured the most because the training's so hard. And then on the final 2 weeks, I was worried about getting ill. My partner actually, he ran in Copenhagen 2 weeks before the London Marathon, and he got back with a cold. and he had to he moved out. Yeah, he did. So I didn't see him for like 2 weeks before the race. So I was living by myself because he didn't come home, which I'm so grateful for because he was actually quite ill. It wasn't COVID, but it was a really bad cold, but still would have made a difference. So yeah, I didn't see him. I think when I get to actually the race day, I'm just relaxed and the training's done. I can just focus on the race. But yeah, something I looked back on actually was really weird. I looked back on my watch data from the race, and the warm-up that I did was 2.23k.
Right.
Yeah, and I was like, wow, that's really weird, because I ran for 10 minutes, so I didn't look at the distance or anything. And then when I got back after the race, I looked at my watch data and it obviously had the race on there and the warm-up. And the warm-up was 2.23. And I was like, oh, wow, that is so weird.
That is
my
weird.
Training partners were like, well, we did 2.232, but we didn't run 2.23. And I was like, well, I don't know.
Oh, no. So now you're just every warm-up, every race now, you're just going to be like,
next
time
I'll just,
can't look at it. It might predict oh, no, it's too fast.
Yeah, I know.
When you took your time off and you were building back up, and you said you were still running, but maybe not following a plan, you were saying you were sort of getting your head straight, basically.
Yeah.
Do you ever use running in that capacity? Because it's very difficult when we speak to athletes that to differentiate the sort of pleasure of running versus being the job, basically.
Yeah.
How is that for you? Do you find it as an easy thing, or can you separate?
So I actually do enjoy training. Like some athletes, they don't like going training, but honestly, I really enjoy it. Even the really hard training, I prefer way more.
Yeah.
I actually hate easy days. I find them so boring. So I prefer to do a workout every day if I had the choice.
Right, nice.
Obviously, I'd just get injured, so I wouldn't do that. But that kind of time, it was just stressful because I had, I was going through an appeal process to try and get in the Olympics. And then it was just a lot of late nights doing that, and then a lot of stress, and then I actually got ill because I was up and doing that, so I just couldn't train. There was just no way I could physically train. I was exhausted, and then having no target either, because London was too far away to start training for, really, and the Olympics obviously that I had been training for was no longer happening, so I kind of just had to take a little break. Otherwise I never would have made it to London Marathon, because I would have been too far out and probably got fatigued before the day. So I think it is a balance, and my coach definitely helped at that time, because he told me just don't really train. And the same thing now, taking a break. I think if I carried on training as hard as I was now, I would definitely get injured or just fatigued, because you just can't do it all year round. So you do have to separate the times when you go all at it, and then the times when you're relaxing.
Yeah. And now are you just going to cruise for a bit?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I said, if I did go as hard as I was before and try and carry on and race, that it wouldn't do me any favors. Yeah. I'd just get injured or ill. So I think now I just take a bit of time to relax. I'll still train, obviously, because I love it, but it will be a lot easier. And then when I next choose what target I'm going to go for, I'll start going hard training again.
There's nothing yet?
Nothing. No, I qualify for the World Champs on Sunday, but that's not till August next year.
Right.
So I'll obviously race before then. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. 18 months of no racing seems to go
that
all right.
That is true. I mean, I could just wait around till then. I think, I'll definitely race before then. Yeah. But whether I even race at the end of this year, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't any targets after Sunday. I had nothing planned. So it was just wait till Sunday, see what happens, and then make a plan. So probably make that plan in a couple of weeks. But like I said, I mean, the next big goal will be next summer, the marathon. Whether I do another marathon before, I'm not sure yet.
And Paris?
Yeah, that will definitely be my plan, hopefully.
Yeah.
Getting the team for that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When it comes to marathon, a lot of the stuff that we ever get asked is based around nutrition. A lot of our readers and our users online really want to know what people eat before a race, breakfast.
Really?
Yeah. This just seems to be they're obsessed.
You don't have to train, but
eat the right porridge in the morning, you'll be flying.
Okay.
What do you eat before a marathon?
So I'm usually in a hotel. So I usually just take a porridge pot to the hotel, plain, and then I have honey, banana and peanut butter on the top.
It's good.
Just so simple, but you can take it anywhere. Even when I race in Japan, I can take that and then just have it in the room or whatever, or take it down to breakfast, because like I said, you can have it anywhere.
See, porridge, there you go, everyone. It's still porridge.
Yeah, just in a little pot.
Nice. I spoke to an athlete ages ago, I can't remember who it was now, but they were racing in Japan and they didn't have their breakfast with them. They didn't prepare to have that with them. So they had cooked rice with jam on top.
I've actually had something similar. Same, yeah, because I got there and I didn't take it for some reason. And yeah, they just have like rice and vegetables for breakfast. Yeah. So I literally just had rice with honey on.
Nice. Yeah, there you go.
Same kind of thing.
Yeah, it's carbs.
I mean, right? I would have that. It's just hard to take to a hotel because obviously you can't cook rice and stuff in the morning.
Take a rice cooker with you. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Take Uncle Ben's rice with you. Yeah.
Well, look, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great to talk to you. Good luck with everything.
Thanks.
As it goes forward. And congratulations again for such an amazing performance at the weekend.
Thanks.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. Huge thanks to our guest, Charlotte Perdue, and to you, of course, for listening.
You should subscribe to Runners World magazine. It will deliver a monthly dose of running goodness through your front door. Head to hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get an exclusive listener offer of just 3 issues for £5. Please like and subscribe wherever you listen to this. Just Google Runners World UK on your favourite podcast apps. You will find us. And subscribe, have a listen, enjoy it. Maybe I'll use the end here to turn this into a local radio station and do a shout out to some people who I've met who've listened. I went out for my mate Josh, who lives over the road. I went out with him and his mates at the weekend. 2 of them listen. Well, maybe one of them listens. Matt likes running. So does Jason. Jason said he listened. So big up, Jason, for listening to the podcast.
Yeah, good on you, Jason. Thanks very much.
Yeah, well done, Jason. And my mate Matt, his brother as well, he listens. So big up to him too. So there's 2 people that I've met in real life, Rick, who've listened. So that's pretty great.
There's probably more.
I think so.
Who knows?
I've looked at some statistics and that's it. Anyway, this is the longest outro we've ever done, so let's leave it.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.